coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 70 of The Curious Realm. Just like to thank everybody for continuing to tune in every week religiously, starting the conversations, having the conversations online. It's great being with you guys. Our guest in the first segment today is physicist Mark Fiorentino, author of The Master of Reality. We will be talking about physics. We'll be talking about the idea of quantum field theories and zero point energies, things like anti-gravity. We'll see if all this makes it through the broadcast. Apparently there have been some odd, spooky things happening with Mark during live interviews. So, it's interesting. I love talking about these topics because the physics behind them and the things, these are all things that were once truly, truly the realm of science fiction. You know, when we're talking fusion, clean fission, that kind of stuff, it's things. I'm almost 50 years old. I've heard talk of them my whole life. We are literally burgeoning on them right now, folks, in our knowledge vault. One of the things we talk about regularly with our second guest tonight, Mike Turber, is the Lockheed Martin design for a nuclear reactor that fits inside of an F-16 platform, literally about the size of your V8 engine, makes this kind of physics possible. When people are like, oh my God, you know, to do something like that, to have any gravity, you'd have to have an entire nuclear reactor to get that kind of energy. You realize how big that would be? Not that big anymore is exactly how big that would be. Like, you know, maybe twice three size of a microwave oven. Think about that and think about the possibilities for a minute, because we will be joining Mark Fiorentino, the author of Master of Reality, to talk about his laboratory experiments, talk about some of the new revelations he has in this territory. Before we do that, of course, it is time for our news of the week. News of the week is brought to you by our Facebook group. Stop on by, join the Curious Realm Facebook group, folks. Over 1,000 people there having conversations about articles about things like what we're talking about tonight. Our first article up out of CNN, repeating radio signal leads astronomers to an Earth-size exoplanet. Now, very fantastic headline. Believe me, folks, it is not like somebody is SOSing to us. What is happening is the movement of the planet in front of its sun is causing a magnetic perturbance. So we can tell by that this planet has a magnetic field, which means it more than likely has an atmosphere. And this is really exciting scientists right now because this planet is in the Goldilocks zone. So out of Live Science, this one's creepy as heck. First, man catches, quote, silver leaf, a tree fungus never before seen in humans. That is straight cordyceps out of The Last of Us, folks. Now that we have tree fungi infecting humans. Out of DailyMail.com, Trump in court. First pictures as he is charged in the Stormy Daniels case. Six predictions for Orwell's 1984 that came true today. That was posted by one of our listeners. Out of New Scientist, light interacts with its past self in a twist on the double slit experiment. That was some really, really interesting data there. And of course, out of Business Insider, a cross between domestic pigs and wild boars was intentionally bred in Canada. The resulting, quote, super pigs escaped captivity and could be invading the United States. That is just some of the news that's fit to print, folks, over on our Facebook group. Feel free to join us there in the conversation. Of course, while you are online, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. That is where you can find all the episodes. That's where you can follow us on social media. That is where you can find the knowledge vault full of declassified programs and documents As a matter of fact, while I'm there, I'll go right here. Look at that second document. There is the downloadable PDF of the actual nuclear reactor. And my favorite thing right here is the lasers that hit the pellet to cause the reaction. They're called heat injectors. Not lasers, not high powered lasers, heat injectors, you know, same way as you'd have fuel injectors in a modern engine. So of course, while you're online checking that out, folks, make sure to stop on by, ResearchGate to check out some of the amazing research by our physicist guest, Mark Fiorentino, as well as super-relativity.com. That is his official website. That's where you can follow all of his work. That is where you can get your copy of Master of Reality, as well as the Curious Realm store. Welcome back to the show, Mark Fiorentino. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you. I just got to correct one thing,
though. What's that?
I'm not an actual physicist. I'm a metaphysician.
That's true.
I don't want physicists yelling at me.
Yeah, there are no letters behind your name. That's true. Right. You are a physics researcher, though.
Right. Definitely.
just because you are not a paper holding physicist, yes, doesn't mean you ain't doing work in the field of physics.
Definitely.
so yes, you are correct. There are no letters behind your name for being an actual physicist. However, the theorems that you have put forth in Master of Reality, I remember when I first read this book, when I had you on Dudes and Beer a few years ago, incredible stuff, amazing things. Like I said in the intro, really, really gets into a lot of the spooky action at a distance, things like that. And the idea of manifestation in the world, the idea of us being able to, as the title says, literally master the reality around us. Now that work is what brought you, of course, into more work on the grand unified theory. Let's start talking with the audience a little bit about how your work on Master of Reality led you to the actual lab work that you are doing now and what that is.
Yeah. I decided that, you know, I proposed some experiments to do in the book for detecting and creating an anti-gravity. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I thought that I was going to use magnets because they're safer for me to use,
sure,
rather than the high voltage choice. But one of the things I've learned is if you really want to build one that you can actually have a shot at in your garage or whatever, it's electrogravitic.
Yeah.
It takes less energy to do that. But the magnetic route was the route I went because that's, you know, been with me since I was a child when I started, mm-hmm, reading about UFOs, and they always seemed to be magnetically propelled at that time. But over the years, I've been awakened to the fact that electrogravitic may even be more popular than the magnetogravitic UFOs and their technologies that use that. So I went into the lab just guesstimating how much energy it might take for me. I have the very sensitive scale I bought. I says I'm going to build a unit, and I did. I designed it using a microcontroller that drove analog devices that were feeding the coils of electromagnets that I hand-built myself. And the goal was to create a rotational vortex wave.
Okay. And, almost a toroidal field.
A toroidal field, yes. And so you had to spin them around and charge one right after another, and faster and faster. I can go up to one millisecond. It's the fastest.
Oh, wow.
In the current design. And I tried different voltages and currents and such. Blew up one power supply. Cool. And I thought I had it. I got excited because I started getting measurements of deflection of the gravitational field, a slight drop. But what was weird is that one pole was making it go down, the object under test that I was measuring, I was weighing on a scale with a string holding up a wooden ball above the magnets, which should have gotten lighter, and it did. But then when I used the poles in the other direction, it got heavier. And I says, wait a minute. Then I says, this is looking like a magnetic effect.
Yeah, yeah, well, like a push-pull.
Yeah, so I said, well, let me get out magnetic shielding. And I shielded the heck out of that ball. And it still happened. And I got really excited. I'm getting a gravitational effect. And I went on for several weeks making measurements and getting excited. I even made an announcement that I had it. I had the measurements and everything. And then I discovered an error in my system. But the way I got those measurements got me thinking, well, could it possibly be that you're not just going to have a anti-gravity field with magnetism, but you're going to also output a gravitational field? So I started doing some research, because at the North Pole, it was actually acting as if it was attracting the object. But if you go and you look on the internet or wherever, and you look at the field lines, the force lines, it should have been the opposite. The lines of force are coming out of the North Pole. That should have been the anti-gravity pole, the repulsive pole. Whereas on the South Pole, they're going in. That is where I would expect it to have the gravitational field, or gravity two, I called it. So I did some research, and I says, could it be possible they got the lines wrong when this first was worked out in the early mid 1700s? And doggone it, you know, they did. They got it wrong. The person that basically discovered electricity, Benjamin Franklin, took a guess. It was an arbitrary guess as to which way the current was flowing, and he guessed wrong. So for the next 150 years, everything was based on reverse current flow that wasn't right. And so the lines of force from magnetism, the right-hand rule, all of that is wrong.
Wow.
And they know about it. And they said, well, don't worry about it. It was only just, we could have said it the other way around, and it doesn't make a difference. It does. If you're working on a unified field theory, you got to have the lines going in the right direction.
Yeah. Otherwise, they would interfere with the other lines.
You would get what I'm getting now. It doesn't make sense, the measurements. But now they do make sense if you reverse the directions and the lines of force in the magnetism and the electrostatic fields. Now those measurements actually make sense. And I said, well, wait a minute. Okay, so Mark, you're saying now you're changing your tune. You for years thought any kind of magnetism was going to stretch space and cause an anti-gravity field. Now you're saying one end, you're taking literally what the fields of the magnet or the electrostatic field are, and whatever direction you're going, if it's pulling toward the magnet, then it's going to be gravitational. And if it's going away from the magnet, it's going to be anti-gravitational. Okay. So let's see if there's some evidence for that. Let's see if somebody else noticed something. So I went back and I dug around and I went over the tapes that Bob Lazar said.
Yeah.
He kept bringing up, hey, there's a gravitational field coming out of the one end of this emitter. Yeah. And I'm saying, Bob, we don't need gravity. Why do you keep bringing that up? And he was more fascinated by the gravitational field than on the other end where the anti-gravity field was.
Yeah.
So he was saying one end did output gravity and the other end did output anti-gravity. And then I went and researched some more, and I found Thomas Townsend Brown made a claim. He's doing electrogravitic. So was Bob Lazar. Bob Lazar's Super Sport UFO was an electrogravitic model. And so Thomas Townsend Brown was saying, you know, if you take the anode of the capacitor or the condenser, that's what he was using to make the anti-gravity field. If you put the anode on top and the cathode on bottom, it has lift. If you reverse it, it weighs more. So he's again confirming one side is outputting anti-gravity and the other side's outputting gravity. So I've determined in the paper I'm writing now, there's a new discovery here. Gravity 2, which is a non-contractive type of gravity, non-inertial. And it's very handy if you want to build UFOs because you spin your ship. The emitter has the gravity on one end and the anti-gravity on the other end.
Yeah.
So you point the gravity end forward and the anti-gravity in the back, and you're literally pushed forward.
And at that point, quite literally, no different than putting two north poles of a magnet together, they will repel.
Yeah. Well, what we're repelling is the space away from, because you have to realize.
Well, you're repelling the gravitational wave.
The attraction and repulsion have to do with the deformation or the bending of space, either toward the object or away from the object that's emitting it. So the ship literally forms a bubble, and everything within it is stretched out because there's a rotation going on in the magnetic field or the electrostatic, either one. And that rotation causes space to move in a circular pattern in one end, out the other end, and it propels the ship.
This is exactly the technology that we have been talking about with our guest that is following you, Mike Turber, hypercavitation. Which is what they are using to hyperpropel USOs underwater. Basically, the idea of having a magnetic field around you that is pulling the object as it closes the magnetic and repels on the opposite side.
Yeah.
Like simultaneously, it is pulling and repelling the object through the bubble. Kind of like the example I've given people is if you put water, like if you pipette water into a straw, then close it. There's an air bubble, and you can pinch each side of that, and that air bubble will move with the water on each side. That's similar to hypercavitation.
Well, I after that those experiments, even though I later discovered that they were a false measurement, it guided me to this realization.
Yeah.
As it turns out, it was what I call a happy accident. And
it's the best failures in the world, Mark.
Well, instead of guessing, you know, the key thing, I did not have enough energy to really see it with the equipment I had.
Sure.
So I says, I'm tired of guessing. So I went out and found the formulas. I found two formulas hidden in the history of physics.
Wow.
Ignored.
Wow.
And these will tell me exactly how much energy is needed. And that's going to be the paper. It's going to change the world because you'll be able to design a ship using this. We'll be able to get ourselves off this planet. And it's important that we have this technology because our Earth's core is not stable.
No, it's not at all.
We could have a major extinction level event at any time.
Mark. It's literally a matter of time. It will happen. It's going to happen. We are far overdue for a full on magnetic flip. And that's what people don't realize. Like we could clean up the atmosphere 100 times over from what we've done and the damage we've done. That's not going to change what's about to happen.
Yeah, well, we're overdue for
I say Super this as Bowl my panel. Beautiful 5-year-old is sleeping in the room across from me, my friend. You know, I mean, it's horrifying to think of, but it's absolutely true. And it's not something that is outside of the records of humanity.
Well, humanity needs to be able to leave, and we need to be on bilocate on another planet.
Yes.
The sooner, the better.
Absolutely.
Just in case. Absolutely. We need to start building farms there, you know, get an agreement if there's other life forms there that are sentient beings. You know, hey, you can come live here if you want. We'll share our planet. You share your planet just in case something really bad happens here. Yeah. All of humanity, including the cabal who thinks they want to keep it all to themselves.
Yeah, have fun with trying that.
No, we really need this to happen. The world will be such a better place for it if we can get this technology out there for everyone to have. And we'll save so many lives.
Well, and once again, Mark, to hear you talking about this and to hear you talking about taking it to the lab, I'm so excited for you. I've literally got goosebumps right now thinking about it, because the work of Hutchison and the Hutchison effect was some of the most remarkable things I've ever seen. And there's still a lot of question out there as to whether or not the videos produced by Hutchison in Canada were real, were not. But I can tell you right now, just working in my own home studio, because I build circuits, I modify things, I tinker, just playing around with a homemade Tesla coil and amplifying the power coming out of that, through magnetic fields, through high powered magnets, things like that. I was able to magnetize copper for a brief period. to the point that the RF field in the room literally destroyed a radio clock that I had.
Yeah, I've done that too.
It looked like Alien, like, you know, the Predator countdown in the movie The Predator. That's what it looked like. And when my wife saw it, she was like, until we get a house where you have your own workshop, like out and away from everything, no more of this at home. Because literally what I was working on was trying to build a miniature version of Der Glocke, you know, and trying to spin mercury inside of a high voltage magnetic field. And hey, if a portal opened, I'll walk through.
That's what I'm trying to do now.
I'll walk through. And I think that's what scared her more than anything, was when I said, when the portal opens, I want you to know I'm walking through. Like, I'll bring my device with me, but I'm walking through.
Yeah, it's definitely fun doing this kind of stuff, going where nobody's gone before, yeah, kind of a thing. It's an adventure for sure.
Well, and it's interesting just literally going citizen scientist on it, you know, because people think, once again, Mark, that you have to have letters beyond your name to do this kind of stuff or to tinker with such things. This is stuff I cobbled together in my home workbench.
With
a general knowledge of electronics, you know, a good knowledge of soldering and things like that. Like, none of the circuits were designed by me. All I did was integrate them together.
Yeah, that's kind of like what I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, just use what's available, which is very nice. Some very great stuff out there. Drivers.
when you're working, especially some of the new toroidal field things that are out there that you can get, some of the new toroidal field coils, that kind of stuff, really, really remarkable results that I have seen from people. Now, when you're using those fields, what are some of the effects that you have been seeing in the lab, Mark?
Well, I thought I had the measurements, and then I did some more work and discovered that it was just a magnetic effect.
Mm.
So now I've decided to try a different type.
Was it a magnetic effect on a higher order than the natural magnetic effect of the magnets you were using?
No, I was just what I thought I had the scale isolated. It was like over 4 feet away. I thought no way the magnetic field is going to go all the way over there, especially since the magnets are, perpendicular to the scale over there. And I was using shielding, but I was using shielding right above the magnet, not to the side.
Yeah.
And there was a little magnetic clip holding the weight on the other end. And over 4 feet away, it was feeling the... That shows you how
still,
strong those...
Still getting perturbed from the magnetic field.
Yeah, just ever so slightly. Had I put the shield in sideways, it would have blocked it. But the beauty of it is it was a happy circumstance that occurred. I don't think it was an accident.
No.
I think there was a higher power that says, look, he needs to see this measurement, but his equipment isn't sensitive enough.
Yeah.
So help him make a mistake so he sees it and starts thinking, which is exactly what I did, is trying to explain what I was seeing, which then I led to the discovery that the lines of force are drawn wrong in all the textbooks, which then led me to the discovery that Lazar was also talking about an emitter that was emitting gravity on one side and anti-gravity on the other side, and so was Thomas Townsend Brown. And then I realized that the photon is a particle that leads with the positive and follows up with the negative. So there's another example.
Hmm.
So now we're on the threshold.
Interesting how a lot of the scientists read into this stuff are laser scientists.
Yeah.
You know, and when you talk about that, when you talk about the fact that the photon is reversed polarity wise in that way, that's an interesting concept, because they would be dealing with that concept of physics on a regular basis, you know, so it wouldn't be a foreign concept to them to wrap their mathematic heads around.
Their velocity all matches. Plus, plus, plus is in the lead. Minus, minus, minus is in the back. So the minus is the anti-gravity, and the plus is the gravitational.
Well, and
which is the opposite. If you look at the drawings in the book, you would say it should be the other way around, but yeah. Those drawings are wrong. So we got that, and now I'm trying another experiment using plasma and a magnetic field. So far, I haven't seen anything yet, but I've only just started. I'm really mainly working on the paper now, because now that I have the math, I may be able to link over and do something really important, which something that Einstein was working on. And I've looked for years, and I finally found it, because I said, this is important. Somebody's got to be working on this. And the thing that they got to be working on is the cause of particle motion. And finally, in his Unified Field Theory of Gravitational Electricity in July 25th, 1925, the last two sentences, he says, nevertheless, I'm still far away from claiming the physical validity of the equations I derived. The reason for that is that I did not succeed in deriving equations of motion for particles yet. That's incredibly important.
Yeah.
Because once you got that, that's the engine of the universe. Everything out there, all the particles are moving. Even stationary neutrons and protons, inside of them, the quarks are moving at 99% the speed of light.
Yeah.
I've already calculated that. So I may be able to make a bridge and have that formula. I think I know a way of doing it. We'll see after I finish this paper I'm working on now. So that's really exciting news.
Well, and, you know, because the calculation for the speed of light was really a key to so many things scientifically. And I think that the two things that people forget about is, yes, the speed of light is a constant, but the speed of light is only a constant in a vacuum.
Speed
of light is not a constant in the atmosphere of Earth. The speed of light is a constant in outer space. Once you get it in a medium of air or anything like that, you can now manipulate and even slow down that speed of light.
Yeah, it's portrayed as a constant because the scientists want it that way. It's easier for them to do their job.
Well, it's easier for them to do the calculation with a constant of something. And once again, that constant is in a vacuum. You know, the other constant of that constant is the constant of nothing moving.
it's in a vacuum. But even that's really, in my book, I talked about Barry Zetterfield discovering that the speed of light over time is slowing down.
Yeah.
And I knew to go to look for that because either the universe is collapsing or it's expanding. If it's expanding, then the speed of light is going to be going faster. And I was pretty sure that in actuality, the universe is in a collapse phase and we are well into the collapse phase. And so all the work that was done by the scientists in 1998 and getting the Nobel Prize,
yeah,
that was cherry picking the measurements. So it made it look like the universe is expanding, but those accelerations from those galaxies are way out there. They're accelerating not because of a mythological dark energy. They're accelerating because they're being pulled toward huge, massive, Titan-sized black holes. And now there's been astronomers that have confirmed that.
We're going to bring it up today. It just posted. Give me just a second. Gravitational. There we go. Look at that. Google did it for me. I put in James Webb and misspelled gravitational, but there it is, folks. James Webb Telescope photos gravitational lensing for the first time. And this was a concept that Einstein talked about a long time ago, that we would be able to see wormholes, that we would be able to see black holes, be able to spot them at a distance by the fact that we knew that there should be a star in this location, but the light was bent around that strong gravitational field. Once again, being perturbed even on its path, even inside of a vacuum, by a gravitational field, which the only way that could happen would be if they were on a repulsive track from each other, gravity and light. If they were on an attractive track fully, that wouldn't happen, you know? It would just absorb all of the light. It wouldn't be able to lens around the black hole.
It bends around.
Yeah.
In our galaxy, along with Andromeda and all the others in our local group, are being pulled. This is known, a well-known fact, toward the Great Attractor, which appears to be a massive black hole.
Yeah, a supermassive black hole at the center of the galaxy.
And the Great Attractor and its group is being pulled to an even bigger black hole.
Yeah.
So this is clearly what's happening. Why say this is the exception in the universe? It's not. It's what's typically happening all over the place. And so these other galaxies that look like they were falling, you know, accelerating away from us. Yeah, they're accelerating because those are being pulled to giant black holes in their area. So this whole expanding universe theory is completely wrong. And, you know, when, you know, there's astronomers are out there, they're out there trying to convince people. They're not getting listened to because, you know, nobody likes it when you talk against the accepted established narrative. Science is really not happy with that.
Despite the fact that, you know, that is literally science.
Yeah.
Like, that's what science is supposed to do. It's not supposed to be static. By definition, it can't be static. It is in constant flux. The whole purpose is being a proper skeptic. You know, being a proper skeptic doesn't mean that you believe or disbelieve necessarily. What it means is that you are willing to take new points of datum into your data set and change your decision accordingly. You believe,
right?
You know, and be willing to say, like, well, shoot, there's some data that totally changes my opinion on that matter, you know, and that's what science is supposed to be. It's supposed to be blind skepticism.
Well, science today is really scientists in this time.
It borders on religion.
Have been blinded by their own presuppositions.
Yeah.
And that's where we're at. And they're holding us back. Humanity can't evolve if we're working on so many things that are incorrect with incorrect assumptions, incorrect interpretations.
That's right.
Spending our greatest resources, like working on string theory,
well,
which can never be proven and is unlikely to be right.
Yeah, by just about everybody's quantum opinion.
Yeah.
That like it was a really interesting theorem, but probably not the case like 98%. But it's interesting how they are willing to hold on to that 2%. You know, wow. And that is one of the things that we bring up regularly about science on this show, is that whether you're talking UFOs, UAPs, and that technology, Mark, whether you're talking paranormal and ghosts, whether you're talking cryptids, Bigfoot, portals, whether you're talking crop circles, yes, 95-97% of it, utterly explainable. Possibly even utterly faked.
Yeah.
But the 2-3% that isn't, my God, I don't know a scientist out there that if doing a solution and you're missing a 3% remainder would just be like, well, I guess that's gone. You know, I don't know a contractor, if you're building a house, that if you came in and went, hey, 3% of my wall's missing. Yep. Got to figure that out, man. See you later.
Well, you do what they do in quantum mechanics. You know how they get the right answer there?
Just they use a crowbar?
27 ad hoc parameters that they throw in to tune the equations to get the right answer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If we tweak this, if we tweak that, if we sauce the butter in just the right way, we get the answer we're looking for.
Well, science is littered with people picking constant numbers. The speed of light they picked. Raymond Burge picked it in, I guess, around 1929 or something. He said, or maybe it was 1940. And yes, 1940. And he basically said, on request from all these other scientists, I'm writing this paper and basically saying this paper is being written on request, and at this time on request, a belief in any significant variability of the constants of nature is fatal to the spirit of science as science is now understood. These words from this man, for whatever reason he wrote them, shut down the debate on the speed of light. You see, that's what they do.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. And you know, I just brought up a study about, is the speed of light the same everywhere? Because the answer is no, it's not. No, it's not. And that is not the common conception. If you ask anybody out there, 98% of people will tell you that it's the same.
It's got worse. Okay, so he declared it this number, and that's it. So after a while, they decided, we're going to stop measuring the speed of light. So back in the 70s, around in that era, you know what they did? Instead of measuring the speed, you know, they used to take a rigid piece of bar platinum or whatever it was from France, so they had the official 1 meter. I think it might have been palladium or some rare metal, whatever. And they would use that distance to measure the speed of light. And instead of doing that now, they say, look, you get your equipment, you set it up. The number is right here, 299,000 or 301,000. No, that's 299 something. 299,792,458 meters per second. You tune it to that number. If you don't get that number, you're not measuring the speed of light right. And so now, the speed of light slowing down problem has disappeared, because every time they set up the equipment, they just tune the equipment to that number. And once they get it, you know, they move the mirrors or whatever so you get the right distance, then the experiment starts.
Yeah.
So now the speed of light slowing down has disappeared because the meter is shrinking. Is anybody bothering to measure? Hey, you know what? That meter is a lot shorter than it used to be.
Yeah. Anybody? And that, once again, like I'm saying, are we exploring the anomaly? Because that's what we're supposed to be doing. That's what science is supposed to be doing. Great if you get your expected result. What about the 2% anomaly?
Yeah.
Because the 2% anomaly, there's something there. And that exactly is the conversation going on right now with UFO, UAPs. I mean, for years and years, you know, people doubted Bob Lazar and all kinds of things until Unimpentium was actively added to the...
We owe him a debt of gratitude.
Yeah. I mean, oh my God, this thing doesn't exist. There's no element in the periodic table that does this, that would provide these properties, anything else. And then lo and behold, utterly found, added as element 115, and has the exact properties as described by Bob Lazar. So it's like, I don't care what any other kerfuffle is about the credos of Bob Lazar. If that isn't credo enough, I don't know what is.
Well, yeah, you know, he made a good point in that really it's unobtainium is just a, the one that's stable is an isotope. Somehow the aliens knew how to make the stable isotope of it. Maybe someday we'll learn how to do that, because the ones that we have are very unstable and don't last very long. But apparently, you know, well, the aliens are a very advanced people. So,
well, yeah. I mean, anybody that would
do that.
Yeah. Anybody that would be, and, you know, the metamaterials that have been examined by To the Stars Academy and other people, all kinds of metamaterials that have been examined where bismuth and other things are atomized together and fused together in layers that are atoms thick, where like metallurgically, we cannot do that on the surface of Earth. Like we are finding some remarkable things now with the science that we have at our disposal. We didn't used to have this kind of science, Mark. You know, a lot of the material science that exists now, where they are reverse engineering things and looking at things, did not exist in the way it does now. I mean, the prime example is that U.S. patent that I showed at the beginning of the show. Me and Mike Turber regularly, Mike Turber has the video on his YouTube channel, but you can go and look up the actual Skunk Works product video for this.
Hmm.
And it came out in 2012, and it shows a dude who's like 25 years old in front of something probably about the size of a walk-in freezer. If you've ever worked at, you know, a restaurant, you know, like a walk-in fridge in his lab. And he's like, yeah, this is the reactor right here. You know, like we can two or three generation this every year. So when you're talking about being able to material science-wise take something and two to three generation it every year, that means making it smaller, more compact, more efficient. Imagine you being able to two to three generation your technology in your lab every year, Mark.
Wow.
Imagine the folds of information that you would be able to gather that way. And once again, this patent was submitted in 2018. February 15th, 2018 was when the abstract was submitted. Now, when you submit that, you got to have a working model, man. You know, you can't just submit a patent. It's got to be practical and it's got to work.
I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure.
I know that you can do quite a bit as far as trademarking theories, that kind of stuff. But this, once again, was technology that they were working on in 2012. Even the kid in the video was like, hey, by the time I finish this, I'm going to need a new career. Like, this isn't going to be what I retire on. It's not going to take me 25, 30 years to do this.
Mm.
He's like, I'm going to be done with this project within a decade. Like, I'm going to need a new job. And yeah, like, there it is right in front of our faces. Like,
well, there's a lot of, you know, Stephen Greer is doing a lot of work with people with zero point energy devices.
Yeah.
That could also solve the problem. Certainly, if you're using the UFOs that use the magnetic fields, it takes an enormous amount of current.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's just it. And, there, you know?
And you need, you know, you just need a really super powerful, you know, the size of a basketball sized power system that can generate megawatts.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. And, like I said,
more power to anybody that can do that. Because if you have that piece, you definitely could build some nice UFOs.
Oh, absolutely. That has been the question about anti-gravity for years. Not even the question, but the issue with anti-gravity. Because there is not a physicist out there that has denied the fact that we could build an anti-gravitic field. That we could absolutely nullify the effects of gravity. The issue is the amount of power it takes to do it.
Yeah. Well, what it's ultimately going to be is the Alcubierre.
The Alcubierre white warp drive.
Alcubierre drive. Yes, that drive is going to be, that's exactly like the my slip wave.
Yeah.
Which is now evolved to Slipwave 2.0. You're going to lead with a positive field and then the negative field. In the Alcubierre drive, the front end is a contraction of space. That doesn't work.
Yeah.
That will not work. You do not want to contract space. You want to use gravity too, which is what UFOs use, where there's no contractive gravity. It's just a lateral movement toward the emitter. And so it's slightly different than the Alcubierre drive. So you have a gravitational field in the front and an expansion field in the back, and it's very similar. But ultimately, it's going to be the slipwave model that's the right model, because his drive, he wants to fold space together and pull it in a contractive way. And
that's lethal. Well, and once again, right here, summary of the invention. The invention uses two Alcubierre gravitational walls to achieve a warp drive effect as a means of propulsion while surrounding or enclosing a cavity or space where passengers can travel. So basically, once again, hypercavitation using two fields.
Yeah, it's
that's
it's,
pretty much the process that he's using, which is once again a known concept. We have submarines that use hypercavitation. We have torpedoes that use hypercavitation. That all we are doing is stepping up a known technology to a new realm.
I call it the slip wave because there's an expansion.
Yeah. Well, and that's just it.
Around the ship. It forms, there's a certain type of field, a cardioid shape.
Okay. Yeah.
It's a cardioid shape.
Yeah. Which is almost a heart shape. Yeah.
Yes. Exactly. A heart shaped field that will be the field that is used whether you're doing an electrogravitic or magnetogravitic. Either way, it's going to form that field. And that's what's going to propel. There you go. That's what's going to propel.
I'm fast, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah, you pull up the right name for Lazar's.
Unimpentium.
Unimpentium, yeah. I had that wrong.
Yeah, well, that's okay. I frequently get it confused with Unobtainium, too. Avatar's a great movie. but that is where they actively pulled some of the properties of Unobtainium in the movie was Unimpentium. Even right here, the cardioid shape shows you the idea, which is almost the opposite of the cavitation, because as opposed to, it's really like you're saying, if you look at the top part of that field, the open part of the heart on top, it's really much more opening the space in front of you while pushing you through it.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got.
As opposed to pulling it directly around.
You're being attracted to.
Yeah.
You're being pulled toward, whereas the space behind you, you're being repelled from. So that's the slip wave. And the beauty of this thing is when you set up either a magnetic or an electrostatic field, doesn't matter, either one do the same thing. It causes a drop in both permittivity and permeability, which again is, these are constants that science says can't be changed, but we know they can because people have made metamaterials, and the metamaterials have used negative permittivity and permeability to zero out permittivity and permeability within the material, which means that material has light can go in it infinitely fast, which is what they're claiming. It's on the internet and ResearchGate. Material scientists are claiming we shine light in this thing, it goes infinitely fast. Of course, the other physicists don't want to accept that.
Yeah. But, well, and I just pulled up the article, Room Temperature Superconductor Discovery Meets with Resistance. But that this article just came out, like it just came out a couple weeks ago, that a team has reached a breakthrough with, because it has been, I mean, of course, the term superconductor, things like that, a lot of that came out of like University of Houston physics research, people like Buckminster Fuller, all that kind of stuff. But it's been the realm of high exotic science and crazy magnetic science for years and years.
I'm surprised that they would even allow that, because I would imagine the cabal will classify that immediately.
Exactly, like meets with resistance is my favorite. That's punny
it is funny. I got that joke.
But
just like the guys that did cold fusion, they really did discover cold fusion, but they were completely discredited.
Because
we can't have a system where you can generate free energy and so those guys were discredited, and if this is the real deal, they'll probably discredit them too.
Well, and that's just it, though. We once again, we are on a burgeoning field of material sciences right now. One of the things that our guest coming up in the next segment and I talk about regularly is the fact of A, you will not hear anything on the disclosure front that is not in the vested interest monetarily and militarily for the United States, period.
Right.
You will not. And even if you go listen to Lou Elizondo, you know, the real tip of the spear as far as a lot of the videos are concerned, that kind of stuff, even he says that the odds are probably greater than not, that it was private contractors testing things against our known military in a known quantitative scenario. If not that, then the same kind of situation from foreign actors. And if not that, the slimmer possibility is something extraterrestrial. All of them need to be explored. But the greater possibility is the fact that it's probably a black budget project dealing with technologies that, like not even the captain of the boat knew about. You know, because it's interesting how the radar systems were swapped out and changed for more advanced systems that could detect all these passive things. And the radar ops didn't even know. Like they got a new classification of equipment installed where like they would have to have a new classification level, like above top secret, to know what this thing does fully. But none of them had their classifications changed. It's like that kind of reeks of we're doing a test on a known quantitative scenario, which means that, once again, we may have recovered technology. Who knows? And that will probably be the announcement. But the only way that they get to make their money back on these lab investments of 20, 30 years of material science is to release them and to say that at least this technology exists. You know, for years, they said hypersonic technology was impossible. Now we are seeing it in the battlefield. You know, so it's a regular dialogue that is being pushed. And we've got to remember that. We've got to remember that whenever we're shooting balloons out of the skies and they're saying a UFO shot down, like these things are there to litmus test, you know, they're there to litmus test our response as a society. to what will happen.
Right.
So we've got to be ready for the movement of not only society, but technology, Mark. And to see people like you, once again, I love the fact that you have no letters beyond your name, man. You are just a citizen scientist who is doggedly pursuing this hypothesis that you have.
Yeah, well, we're going to finish this paper and then move on to just a little more math. I'm finding math is
just a little more
easier. Just a little more, just a little tweak.
That's a lot of math, man. That's a lot of math. Like, I can't even quantify the math because, like, I can do my taxes. That's the math I can do. You know, like I can calculate the speed of sound in a room from the stage, so I can find the standing wave in a room and the first frequency that should feed back. I can do that. Used to be able to do it in my head. Now I can do it on a calculator in my hand. But that's what I got, dude. I can't do that kind of calculation. I understand the broad concepts, you know. I can sit back, I can have these conversations and grasp the concepts that are being talked about, and they are some high order concepts. But at the same time, it resonates so much with common sciences that are out there already, you know. Mm-hmm. Once again, to hear the fact that, yeah, the photon is reversed, to think about the importance of lasers in all of this.
Brings
about a lot.
Well, all I know is what I see in the drawings, and the drawings say that the photon leads with the positive, yeah. Which it just matches what Lazar says. It matches, yeah, what Thomas Townsend Brown. If we really look, it's a pattern. This is a Rorschach pattern. You put all the clues together, and they all suggest the same thing. And so we're on the threshold now of being able to come up with a formula for the particle motion, which is the prize of prizes that, yeah, modern day physicists, their jaws drop if you mention it. Oh, you're doing that? Oh, no, you can't do that. You know, quantum mechanics says the particles don't really move and particles don't have position. You know, don't do that.
The scary part is that not only do they have position, but technically they have to know where their position is going to be. Because their positions change in relation to the atoms around them and the particles around them.
They have a velocity. Yeah. They have a direction, a motion, and a direction.
The idea that, funny how we can take a picture of a particle, you know, that's moving faster than the camera. So it's like, it's almost like the particle knows it's being observed.
You could see particles in cloud chambers.
Oh, sure, sure.
Don't tell me they don't move. Don't tell me they don't have a position, because I can see them all over the cloud chamber.
Yeah.
Explain that one away with quantum mechanics.
Exactly. Oh, Mark, once again, I'm glad that you came back on the show. We've got to have you back on more regularly, especially now that you are in the lab, to talk about updates in your research, everything else. This is so fascinating, man. I am so excited for you. It's incredible.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate that.
Absolutely. Before we let you go, let everybody know where they can go to keep apprised of your latest work on ResearchGate, where they can go to follow all your videos on YouTube, where they can follow you on social media, Mark.
Okay.
Go to buy your books.
Yeah, that's right. I'm on www.super-relativity.com. Super-relativity.com. And there's buttons on the front page. It'll take you to where you want to go. There they are. There's the main buttons, the hot spots. Take you to my paper, takes you to my, to where you could buy the book. I don't know where there's shoes going over there. Somebody's selling shoes on my website.
Way to go, ads. Any penny you can make, buddy. That. Any penny you can make. That's okay.
I did not authorize that.
There could be worse things than shoes, Mark. There have been worse things than shoes on my websites, believe me. And I was like, whoa, I really didn't authorize that.
Funny. I guess that was Amazon or something.
Yeah. Well, Mark, once again, thank you so much for the time. I'll be sharing links with you for all this tomorrow, everything else. I would like to have you back on again and again and again. Definitely. To follow up with this work. It is so phenomenal. And like I said, I will talk to, my buddy about getting you on that email list with all those other physicists, with letters who may just be interested in what you're doing, and the information you can provide might even spur them in other ways. Some of the conversations, man, like I said, just to be a fly on the wall in those conversations sometimes is really interesting. So take care of yourself, my friend. We will definitely be in touch.
All righty.
All right. Man, always a great conversation with Mark Fiorentino. I'm so glad to have him back on the show. While you are online checking out all of the amazing work of Mark Fiorentino, everybody, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is where you can find our knowledge vault. That's where you can get your copy of the Alcubierre White Warp Drive that we were talking about earlier. That is where you can download, if you go to the Declassified Government Programs and Documents, that's where you can download the Lockheed Martin Mini Reactor patent. All kinds of things there. Stop on by and check that out. Make sure to stop on by and check out our experiencer form. We now have an experiencer hotline as well. If you are an experiencer of the paranormal, the strange, if you're an abductee, if you're a targeted individual, if you're a government whistleblower, give us a call. 512-298-3913 is the experiencer hotline. We will use your voice message on the show and present your case to our experts and try to get you some answers. Of course, if you would like to be anonymized, we will make sure that your name is not used at all. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. Stay tuned through our commercial break. When we come back, we will be joined by our good friend Mike Turber of 5x5 News. We will be talking about updates on the Chinese balloon kerfuffle that happened. There was some news articles that came out this last week. We will also be talking about updates from the FBI about the Route 91 shooting, the Mandalay Bay massacre, literally the largest mass shooting in the country, and what the new FBI findings are about it, and how hilariously we have been saying these findings literally since about the first time we had Mike Turber on, from the shooting about 5 years ago. It's interesting to see how the FBI has finally caught up with the trail of details and gone, well, yeah, seems like this very obvious conclusion may be the fact. So we'll be talking about that. We will be talking about how not only it was sensationalized, but oh, so quickly forgotten and still not talked about. This horrible tragedy. We'll be talking about that. We'll be talking about Chinese UFO, balloon updates, all kinds of things with Mike Turber when we get back from these messages, folks. With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spigeric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots – every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get 2 25-milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com and the code is CURIOUS7. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies. Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultation workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training and use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website again is PodcastCadet.com. Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store. And welcome back from that commercial break, everybody. Thank you so much to our live guest tonight, Mark Fiorentino. It's been so long since we have had him on. We always had great conversations with him. Really interesting to listen to and consider the possibilities of Einstein and the theory of relativity and the way that it works with manifestation and the world around us in a quantum way. Strange things at a distance, spooky action at a distance, that kind of stuff. In this segment, we are welcoming back our good friend Mike Turber from 5x5 News. You can find all of his work on his YouTube channel, folks. Feel free to stop on by and check them out. 5x5 News is what you want to look for there. I am bringing that up right now as we speak. and there they are. So stop on by, check them out. We're going to talk a little bit about Vegas at the end of this, because there's been all kinds of updates from the FBI with the Route 91 shooting finally. But we're having Mike back on to discuss the Chinese balloon incident and new information that has come out as far as, did they actively gather any information from the Chinese balloon while it was in the air? Anything like that? I had no idea that my wife's cat was actively in my studio until right now. he finds corners and sleeps behind my rack equipment and stuff. It's great. So anyway, Mike, welcome back to the show, my friend. How are you doing?
I'm good, bud. How are you doing? You got to love.
Apparently cat infested right now.
as long as your cat doesn't fall asleep on top of your stereo amplifier and then somehow gets nice and warm and does his thing.
Oh, no.
And then zaps himself.
Oh, no.
Yeah, my cat did that.
Yeah, never had that happen. But my synthesizer back there, before I closed in the bottom part of the rack, my son's cat would come and take naps inside the synthesizer cabinet. You know, just because if I fits, I sits situation, you know, it was just funny. Yeah. Like, oh, well, all right. I guess that's where he comes and just hangs out and takes a nap while I work. But
yeah, you got a 24-hour cat cam.
That's it. Well, welcome back to the show as always, my friend. We had you on not too long ago discussing the Chinese balloon, discussing everything that came out. I mean, of course, we had it here first before it was released in mainstream media that there was an intelligence gathering package on the balloon. It has since come out here in the last week that while there was intelligence gathering equipment on the balloon, were they actively gathering anything? And were we able to stop them from gathering it? Which is, of course, like what we were trying to do with, you know, a U2, everything else was jam those frequencies.
Right.
And there is the shot right there, the amazing shot from the Dragon Lady. And when you look at that, like that is literally like a satellite size package being carried by a balloon. It's so ridiculous. So
yeah,
like, it's one of those you couldn't be trying to be sneaky.
That's not something you can relatively hide. Or I don't know why they may have expected that somehow
three city buses in length, huge, like massive. Yeah. Like how are you not gonna see that platform floating over the sky?
They'll never see this.
Yeah. They'll never see this one coming.
Let's make it so glaringly obvious that they won't see it.
Well, and of course it begat a kerfuffle. It begat all kinds of things, all kinds of talk in communities. Like right now, right now MUFON is actively making a response to the situation because of the mass number of reportings that came out. People saying that, you know, oh, it was something else and the government's trying to cover it up. All kinds of stuff.
Not this time.
But it is definitely the situation, as we've discussed with you and with other, I mean, I wouldn't say whistleblower with you necessarily. I mean, when it came to Route 91, most definitely whistleblower.
Absolutely.
Intelligence source. And
You've had a couple of we leaked. I think you're the only person to ever have had it, or had it first by far, was the e-package that was on board. That came via that phone call, and where he thought he was talking to a Chris that was on our team.
Yeah.
So anyway, I thank God for
that ubiquitous name sometimes, you know. It's like the two most popular names in the world in 1975 when I was born, Mike, were Christopher and Muhammad.
There you go. And 66 is Michael.
I'm pretty, like, you call me either one, pretty safe.
Yeah.
You know?
There you Yeah, so we covered some, we covered ground. There's pieces of information that we released that, that have, there's one that hasn't, that I haven't seen it anywhere else yet. It may have. I've been so busy with the air show and with Eric and stuff like that here last week, but, where the other balloon that they had heading this direction, they ditched it over the mid to north Pacific an hour and 38 minutes after this one was shot, not after it hit the water, but after it was shot. That's when that signal went to that balloon to take it down, and it went down. So I guess they did that and then may have used that as some sort of negotiation to keep, you know, keep Secretary of State and all that, everybody happy going over there. But yeah, the, there's, apparently some intel, that was able to make it back to China. And that for me was not really even news. It was kind of odd, because naturally we didn't jam the balloon from the moment that it took off, and we didn't jam it the entire time it was in our skies. It was just not feasibly possible to do so. And I believe one of the Lady Dragons did not have the appropriate
jamming equipment.
Almost
for that E-package necessarily. And you have to remember that, that not like, hey man, an F-16 Fighting Falcon carries some jamming equipment. Like every Air Force aircraft out there, every Navy aircraft out there carries some sort of jamming equipment. But is it specifically designed for the E-package that was being carried by the balloon? No, not necessarily.
Well, the, when I say E-package, it doesn't mean electronics. E means explosives.
Yeah.
Just so you know. Okay, so the explosive package was they did find it. It was set to detonate on a signal. So luckily, obviously, that didn't happen. When they could have done something really crazy, but they didn't. They left it alone, and that's exactly what they could have done, and they operated properly. I think China, in some ways, they realize they can't screw up. I don't view them like I view a true terrorist nation or Putin or somebody like that that might be a little bit unhinged and might do something and then somehow.
No, they're pretty measured. They're pretty measured. Yeah. Even in their evils. Which are rampant and huge. Watch the live action Mulan. You can actively see the camps in the background. It's kind of horrifying.
That's true. So what happens is we've got two ladybirds,
Lady Dragons.
Lady Dragons, Ladybird was the woman that was working with me in the motorcycle company, but Lady Dragons that were in there, and there's one that has, there's a package that looks like a dorsal fin or a dorsal package that's on the back of the plane, the U-2. And you know, this particular one in that image that you have there did not have that package. And that package actually is a lot more, powerful. I'll put it that way. It covers a lot more frequency ranges, than the normal package that's on board for, you know, electronic countermeasures and, you know, EW, electronic warfare and stuff like that. So since that one didn't have it, then it's very possible that those frequencies that they were transmitting on were not necessarily covered by the onboard, you know, EW package that the U-2 standard carries with it. So the other one did fly. We do know the one with the dorsal did fly, and there were three distinct missions to that. I believe is also three different planes that went up to the balloon. And they, once they jammed, now here's the kicker. Now we mentioned this before. Once they jammed the signals or attempted to jam the signals to and from the spy balloon, that balloon at that point is no longer under the control of China. It is at the beck and call of how we want to handle it. Now, I'm not saying that we took control over it, because I don't think we had the whatever the frequency is or and the commands that you would send to it to have it do a certain thing.
Yeah, because you'd have to have the programming package as far as what control Dalyrons,
right?
Know, all and, that kind and, of good stuff.
And I'm sure encrypted. And ideally, the only real control you have over a balloon is up and down. There's no wing surfaces. There's no control surfaces of virtually any type. And so what you have is just the ability to raise and lower the balloon based on favorable winds, just like any other balloon, buoyancy layer or boundary layer pressurized balloons. They do that. And also obviously hot air balloons. That's how they're able to take off and know basically where they're going to land, just because they kind of know where the upper level winds are going to be blowing that day. And that's important. And you know, when you fly from say California to Japan or China or wherever, flying that direction, you're going against the wind. So the winds are more favorable when you come back. So in fact, if you leave Shanghai and you land in LAX, you actually land before you take off. It's a 12-hour flight.
Well, and it's interesting because once again, this was even by looking at the package that's on there, not your typical balloon package that you would see as far as a scientific balloon, things like that. It was definitely a platform, a platform, whenever you look at it. But even Scientific America had an article. Scientific American had an article that I just had up on screen about
the amount of power the thing generated with the panel.
Oh yeah, man, exactly. Like the amount of juice that it was pulling with those solar panels, it wasn't just like taking some altimeter readings, you know?
Exactly.
It wasn't just like altimeter and temperature. Like it's got some hardcore stuff. But even this Scientific American article titled "Chinese Spy Balloon Has Unexpected Maneuverability." It had directional fans, things like kind of like what you would put on a blimp, you know, things like that, where, yes, it's not necessarily at a full on dead float, you know, balloon packages would be. They could they couldn't necessarily steer it against the wind.
Yeah. Let me clarify.
They could steer left or right. Not really.
Oh, not at all. Let me clarify how that is. I'm glad you brought that up because that's been something people have been bringing up that's totally wrong. Okay. What any of those fans or ducts that are on board, they are not necessarily meant to be able to control the actual movement of the balloon. They're made to stabilize the balloon so it can take good pictures. They're just like, imagine like a gimbal. It's made to stabilize or to keep the orientation of the package, like the solar package, towards the sun.
Gotcha.
And just like the small ability to rotate. And it might be able to do some very, I mean, you're trying to move a huge package with just a little fan at altitude with wind. So ideally you're still you're working with the prevailing winds. You're not going to fly against the wind.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's mainly made to keep all the packages aimed where they need to aim, whether it be the imagery, whether it be the antennas, and because the antennas, keep in mind, antennas are made to transmit away from the antenna, but not up. In other words, if you're on a base and then they're listening to communications on the base, the people on the base are not transmitting the signal up. They're transmitting the signal just like cell towers do. Everybody's seen cell tower antennas. They're just big, like a flat box. And they're made to transmit those signals at about a 10-degree spread out, away from the antenna. So if you're going to capture any of those errant signals that come from those, one, you're going to be far away from the antenna because you're not going to be able to catch the signals of the antenna right below you. Yeah. You're going to catch the signals of antennas that are far away. So you got to have a really good antenna. And also almost like a parabolic, like a parabolic reflector or something like that, something steerable. And that is again, why they have the ability to make those small maneuvers. And even inside the, now I don't know if this balloon had it or not. I haven't seen much of what the FBI has done. I've been told some of it, but this part I don't know. But what I do know is from looking at a previous balloon, the imagery that we had of it, which is really quite good. There's one, let me give you a case in point. If you're going to fly a balloon over Hawaii, you might want to think twice about not wanting people to see what you got, because there are some very powerful telescopes.
Yeah. 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 Like straight optical telescopes, not like,
yeah.
Like the stuff that they have up on Kilauea and stuff like that is absolutely phenomenal. Like the lens is the size of my home.
Yeah. And I've been inside tech and all that. And that's like a huge binoculars, but it's amazing to go in there. And I went in there by accident. I'll tell you the story sometime. But some of the smaller scopes, and also the military bases there, they also have their own scopes, and they have the long time ago they had the higher you could have the scope up a mountain or something, the further out to sea you could see to see if enemies were coming. So they still have some of these locations, and so they utilized some of those to look at some of the balloons that were coming over, and some of these have independent sections that each section is like a module kind of thing, like one university or whatever it is, and Hunan will build this part, like Sanya will build one part, Yulin will build some other part, and then you go from there. So anyway, so I'm trying to remember where the hell why I started talking about the imagery of that one, but anyway, so we can definitely tell what's on these things, and
Once again, the article that kind of spawned this conversation between us was
the NBC article.
The NBC article about Chinese spy balloon gathered intelligence from sensitive U.S. military sites, despite efforts to block it. Once again, bringing up that U-2 spy plane, I've got the images of the standard Dragon Lady, which is, of course, what took the selfie images, everything else, and was tracking this balloon across the country from Montana, basically till the point that the YF-22 took over and took it out. But it did not have, as you said, the package, the electronics package, the jamming package.
You would be able to see that in the shadow.
Yeah. Yeah,
because it's very clear the shadow against the balloon was. I mean, that's such a beautiful shot that guy took. It's just amazing picture. Yeah,
and you can definitely see it there. There is no dorsal attachment on that.
Right, and so I'm sure he's using some. Obviously, he's recording whatever. Keep in mind, even when we jam something, that doesn't mean it's not able to transmit.
Yes.
It just means the transmission is not going to get where it's going. So the balloon is still transmitting. So we're still receiving whatever the balloon is trying to transmit. It's just the location we're trying to get that transmission to is not going to probably receive it. Yeah. But there's no guarantee on that. Sometimes it'll come through garbled. It may be encrypted. And sometimes you'll get a digital spurt of those things come across because they're not analog. Since they're digital, you can actually kind of recreate, bits and pieces of it.
You can reconstruct data because of the known quantitative of other pieces of data, other packets that you've already collected.
Exactly. And also, just so everybody knows as well, most high-tech transmission packages will transmit a code let's say we're sending an image, and the image is 500 lines of code. It's going to send a thing saying, you're going to get an image and you're about to get 500 lines of code. If you don't get the 500 lines of code, let me know. And each number, you can just tell me which ones you need, and I'll replace just that. So we're not wasting bandwidth.
Yeah.
That's how they do it with all the deep space probes.
Exactly. Because it's not like they're like emailing a picture home.
Right.
And that's stuff that's been done since like Voyager 1, these programming protocols.
And that used to be one of the levels of encryption that we had, is that they would transmit the lines just like you see on a television. You have 525 scanning lines on the old TV set, right?
Mm.
So imagine if it didn't matter if you saw it live, I just took a picture and I'm going to send you these lines, but I'm going to send them intermittently.
Yeah.
So if I send you like five and then I'll mix in something with something else, that at one point was a level of encryption where you would receive lines 1, 7, 10, and so forth. And then the next transmission, you might receive something different or something.
You'd receive 3, 5, 8, 9.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. Because then if somebody's intercepting a transmission, they're only receiving part of the information and they don't know what it all is.
And a lot of times people, like when they would intercept these transmissions, they would think, oh man, the resolution on these cameras is really bad.
Yeah. But the resolution code and what to encode it to doesn't come till the end.
Yeah. It's just like the codec you have today, you know, like that, you know, if you're doing something with H.264 mm-hmm. or H.265, you know, or MP4, MP3, MP3 or whatever.
Transcoding or what have you.
Exactly. So you send the code in advance and say, this is what you're going to receive. This is the code to use, or this is blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And then it does. So anyway, so what I'm getting at here is that there's a couple of things you have to read in between the lines here. One is NBC gets a story and it basically says that China was able to transmit signals home. Okay. Who cares?
Sure. The real question is, as we discussed before, did we live real time intercept that transmission?
Yeah. And not only that, not intercept it, but just completely, you know, jam it. If we jammed it completely, that's one thing. But the other thing is this, it's impossible to jam that balloon from the moment it takes off in Henan, China. Okay. Comes across and then whatever, and there's going to be moments even when it's being jammed that a signal may get out for some reason or another, whatever the reason is. I won't go into details, but it's just
once again, like we said in the first and the second time that we covered this story, Mike, the whole reason that the balloon wasn't scuttled to begin with, like on site, was granted, over Montana, pretty good chance it's going to land on a whole lot of nothing, you know. But at the same token, it would have landed on a nuclear site.
Lend them old house. Come out and take a look at this. Yeah.
Granted, once again, you do not know at that moment what is carried inside the package. If there's an explosive charge, if there's biological material inside the balloon. That you don't want to carry through prevailing winds across the country, you know? So And once again, even to have a full on jamming, who's to say that electronic package being carried inside doesn't talk to the E package and say, upon jamming, scuttle.
Right.
You know? Yeah, if you jam it could scuttle itself over a populated area, and you don't want that.
There's an international just so you know too, and a lot of people may not know this. There's an international treaty about auto destructs, and there are some of it may be classified, but there is specific instructions. I'll just put it in layman this way: there's specific instructions that each country has that in regards to rocket planes. This whatever or whatever it is they're doing about auto exploding something over a certain location, it cannot just make that decision on its own. So it has to be
a command that comes into it.
So that's what happened to the one over the Pacific, and this one had that package on board to receive the signal, and they could have sent it basically at any time. And who knows? They could have had it. You know. They could have made it go off underwater if they wanted to, or upon touching water, it could go off, you know, something like that. That's a legitimate.
And once again, though, you don't want them to necessarily know that you are actively jamming their satellite.
Correct. They're going to know it. I mean, there's no mystery. I mean, we're talking about a balloon, and we're talking about, okay, well, we were talking to this balloon, and now we're not talking to it. It's over Malmstrom Air Base, blah, 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 you know. So they're going to put two and two together, and the Chinese are actually in a lot of ways more advanced than Russia, I'm very impressed with the speediness of how they are able to get things to market, so to speak. We'll pretend like it's a product, because I could send a knife design over there and have a prototype within a week, and if I tried to do that here, it'd be 3 months.
Yeah,
but the bigger picture here of the NBC story and what everyone needs to take away from this is that information was given to NBC to tell them that China was able to receive some of those signals. So basically, we want you to be afraid again, because apparently the balloons were not scary enough. So we're going to do a little fear mongering here and just say something that's true, but it's obvious to anyone in the intelligence community. We all know that. But to the average American reading the story, they're thinking, oh, well, the UT was there, it was jamming the signals, blah, 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 and nothing got out. Well, a lot got out, but it was really not as much. Now, here's another part of the story that I don't necessarily believe. When they said that the balloon was doing figure eights over a certain airbase or a certain base, I'm not 100% sure that happened. Until I can see some sort of proof of that, I don't know if that happened or not, because I first off, no one on the ground has said that they were looked up and they could see the balloon came back, you know, because it would have to come. If it's doing figure eights, you're going to go one direction and you're going to see it come back. And I don't know of anyone that has said that. So I don't have that. And so that's why I'm going to take that with a grain of salt. So whoever reported that, I would love to know. I mean, I know one of there's three sources to that article, and I know who one is, and I know it wasn't him. So I'm wondering if it's one of the other two who I don't know. And, I'm getting at, it's just like, okay, someone fed NBC some stuff. Hey, we need to get this back on the table for some reason. I don't know why. Maybe they just, you know, they're negotiating with China on something and they want to put something back on the table. I don't know.
And I mean, that was of course a big thing when this happened. There was a big kerfuffle with China. China was pissed. Pardon my language. Yeah. They were really, really pissed, because it was one of those, like, you want us to start shooting your balloons down, dude?
Exactly.
Quite literally their response. Like, we see your balloons regularly. We need to start shooting those down.
Exactly. So that is a valid point. It's
not an unstandard practice for any. I mean, people freak out because right after this there were like Russian jets, and it's like, do you keep track of the news? Like, we are constantly escorting a Russian bomber off the coast of Anchorage, like, consistently. Yeah. That's like an every other month situation.
That is true. That is true. I do think that we are being, and this is just me being straight honest, have nothing to do with anything as an expert of any subject. And I don't claim to be an expert on just, military in general.
Yeah.
But we are being tested.
Oh, yeah.
And we're being tested more. I mean, more, either they're releasing more information for some reason, or we're being tested more. From the inside, we're definitely being tested more, because from the outside appearance, and this is really not even debatable, other countries believe our country has a weaker president than it did before. That is not a debate. That doesn't matter if you're Democrat, Republican, but that's what they believe.
I want to say it may have been with you about Trump, and you know me. I mean, my fans, my listeners, my family knows me. I am as purple as my logo when it comes to politics. I hold no party. I vote no party line. I thought electing Trump was like electing my, I love you, Dad, but I thought it was like electing my dad president. It was like, what is this? Oh my God. Yeah. If you'd never thought that Idiocracy would come true, folks, never forget Trump was a WWE wrestler. We did elect a wrestler as president. So we are literally living Idiocracy as we speak. We may as well all be watching Oh My Balls on a Wednesday night.
Or just watch The Simpsons if we want to know what's going to happen in politics.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. They predicted that down to it. It was great. But the one thing that I said was, you can get ready for a long period of peace while he's there, because... Yeah. Nobody wants to jack with that crazy. Everybody still, of course, thinks that for some reason, at any point ever, that the president had a jolly red button to launch the nukes on his desk.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for some reason, people still believe that, Mike, and believe that, like, that's a thing. Like, yeah, there's a dude following him with the, quote, football with codes. But there's, like, 85 generals in charge of that, not the president. He's, like, the last dude to be informed, you know?
And with this particular president, I'm kind of happy about that. And our last president, to be honest with you, I mean, you know, Trump has his issues and there, Biden has.
There was a crazy quotient that you were dealing with Trump that was just unknown because he wasn't a political career. You know, he wasn't someone like that, that you could at least look back at the last decade of how they voted politically, what they did politically, and you could somewhat metric what their measured response would be. Well, close your eyes, throw the dart. We'll find out what the response is, you know.
And you have to face the fact that if you look at it from one standpoint alone, Russia has invaded a country under every single president since Putin has taken office, except one.
Except one.
Except one. Well, and we know who that is.
Regardless of any hotel deals.
Yeah, exactly. He's got a hotel over there. He's got some deals going.
Back to this. It's the idea of, like we've said numerous times with you and other guests, they will not declassify or disclose anything that is not in their vested interest. Even to see Lou Elizondo saying the fact of what we've seen in Nimitz, GoFast, Gimbal, things like that may be like what you and I have said numerous times. Our own contractors and military, A, being things against a known quantitative. Not everybody on that ship, not even the captain, has to know that that is an active test of technology. Best if they don't.
Yep, and then that would explain their lackadaisical attitude whenever they were informed by Kevin Day and various people saying, hey, no one in upper management, so to speak, seems to care.
And it would make perfect sense as to why the pilots of that E-2 aircraft had data tapes taken.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff. Thanks for our data. Appreciate you gathering it all for us. You know, well, couldn't have done it without you.
We're going to have a wonderful field of shows here pretty soon and all that stuff. Once I get to Arizona and piece all this stuff together and finish up these videos, it's going to be an eye opener, big time. And I think, you're going to get to see it before pretty much anybody. So I'm going to have you look at it and a couple other people that I trust opinions on and say, look, here's what I'm about to put out.
And I can't wait for that, Mike. You know, once again, there have been numerous people, especially with the UFO UAP topic, that have always questioned you, your presence, what you talk about, things like that, whenever I have you on. And
of course,
I understand the situation that you pulled a long time ago.
Absolutely.
In a counterintelligence way. But for me, it's the fact of what you've done. And what I know, I'll trust you to the end of time, my man.
I appreciate that. And the thing about all of that is that once I made the decision, and I know this is a different topic for another show, but just a quick synopsis. Once I made the decision to pull out of that, then you have to look back at, not all of that was pulled out of the hat. There's a lot. I didn't go to these places just to, you know, make that look real. There was some stuff going on. So and all of that's going to come to fruition and people will understand why I always held things out and couldn't talk about a particular thing, because if I did, it would be diluted and I didn't have all the pieces of the puzzle together. For the Roosevelt, the Roosevelt events, those pieces of the puzzle are pretty much cut and dry now. As far as the Nimitz, it is a very, very tough web to weave because of the personal testimony of the pilots and Kevin Day and the other people. And you have to be very careful about that. And I'm only going to talk about the tangible evidence. And so we'll get to that when we get to it. And, but everybody stay tuned because you're going to be in for one wild ride and you're going to hear some things you ain't ever heard before.
Well, and you know, just to bring things back full circle, not just on the balloon, because, we covered that quite a bit today, and I'm very happy to keep covering that and keep uncovering that and keep peeling the layers of the onion back.
I think they're going to use it for fodder in the Senate.
Absolutely. And once again, if you think it wasn't part of furthering the UFO UAP debate and funding and things like that, you're wrong.
Keep in mind too, we had that one China balloon shot down, and then day one after this balloon shot, we get another balloon shot down, then another balloon shot, then another balloon shot down, and then someone said, "Hold up, wait a minute,
incursions in our airspace."
Yeah, they're like, okay, now because it began backfiring. You're gonna once we figured out one was maybe a Pico balloon and this and that, and obviously they're not, you know, aliens and all this other stuff that we want them to be. And they had to stop shooting down $200 balloons because it was embarrassing enough. We embarrassed China, and China embarrassed themselves, and that was where we should have left it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But then we started shooting down $200 balloons or $12 balloons with
$430,000 into that airspace. So much so, like, we showed the FAA documentation of like what to do when this occurs. Like, you know how to spot a balloon on your radar, and when it happens, here's the protocol. So like, no reason to be going out blasting missiles over the frigging Great Lakes.
Yeah. And the guy, and like you said, the guy's got some target practice. That was cool.
Hey, but, you don't get your, tip of the hat to you, fella. You got to fire off two. Not everybody even gets to fire off one in their career as a pilot. In training do you get to see like a missile fire off your rail. You know?
And here's where the funny part comes in. If you think about it, whenever radar systems were upgraded, all of a sudden they could see new objects that they'd never seen before. And guess what the objects happened to turn out to be? Balloons, as evidenced by what we just went through. Nimitz went through it. Kevin Day went through it. They went through it with the Roosevelt group because they were seeing these things every day when they upgraded their ANPG to the AMPEG S-79, whatever number it is.
And once again, during all of that, none of these guys' classification had been lifted. Right. So that they were aware of the fact that they had new instrumentation that could see things.
Exactly. And Kevin Day is a prime example of that. You would think that the person running the radar on
running the new top secret radar that your classification would be changed and adjusted accordingly.
Yep. And that was one of the first things he said to me. He was like, you know, one thing that, you know, that makes a lot of sense was that my radar was upgraded and I had no idea. Yep. And so,
neither did the people maintaining the radar.
Exactly.
The maintenance technicians didn't even know or have the upgraded clearances.
Yeah, they didn't have AC, and he had, and Kevin Day had a regular security clearance, mid level, because there's only three actual levels. So he had that level, and because he didn't have the other clearance, he was not cleared, even though his radar was upgraded or the capabilities, the new capabilities of it. So how to identify something common. Yeah.
In an uncommon setting with your new equipment.
Right. And that's something that they probably should have. That's something in hindsight. And you can't put these guys into a radar room with a brand new upgraded phased array radar and that can now see weather balloons where before it could not see weather balloons. And these things are popping up. They're flying at 100 knots, exact same wind speed at 28,000 feet as the wind that day. But Kevin didn't know that. Kevin didn't know the wind speed at 28,000 feet was that speed and in that corridor that day. Yeah. So to him, it's just planes or objects coming down.
It's just an object that he's never seen before.
Exactly. And flying in a loose formation, which we found out was over 10 miles apart, which I thought was, they, when he said the word formation, my mind just thought, I just, like this weekend, I just saw the Blue Angels. Dude, unprecedented access to this air show. I know I'm doing the squirrel so thing much. Here, but oh my God.
I hate
God,
you
dude.
So much, dude.
Folks, I was on the runway.
I want to tag you in the personal so hard.
Like, oh man, people look at me. What are you doing?
I and love I was you, the man, only that person was, I loved. That was rough man, to so watch awesome. Online.
Oh man, it was just, I just can't. And guess who I brought with me the second day?
I saw that. And that's what I want to spend the latter part of this talking about.
We'll get into who that was.
The updates that have come out. I'm bringing up the article right now from USA Today. Sure. FBI Mandalay Bay shooter in Las Vegas who killed 58 was angry about how casinos treated him. And I'm going to go back to my Google search here, folks, so you can see the number of articles. And four days ago, this is all like latest news from the FBI, you know, that this is a latest in details offer insight to Route 91 mass killer. Eric Paddock has been saying this since y'all's original interviews with him, since you and Ram Dennison originally interviewed him for Money Machine, the documentary about the Route 91 shooting, and not even, you know, really, you know, what a lot of people mistake is that it doesn't break down multiple shooter things, anything like that. It goes into Mr. Paddock, what happened and why he was angry at the casinos to begin with. But then it goes into what happened to all of the money after. And how all of the money from, you know, Vegas Strong campaign, things like that, all just poof went away, and how the sheriff's department just destroyed right of documentation, proper documentation, and kept changing timelines like every 5-6 hours.
Yep. And you know what makes me kind of mad a little bit is that I think six people who were the original FOIA that this whole answer where all the FBI files comes out at. And I'm not mad because of once the accolade or the pat on the back or whatever. It's just that sometimes people need to be recognized when they go out of their way to try to gather information for people only to have the FBI just put it in their vault and say, we're going to put it over here. Sorry, Michelle. Sorry, Mike. Sorry, you know, what's her face at the RJ and, you know, all these different people that FOIA requested this stuff, and all of our FOIAs got in like within almost, it seemed like an hour of each other. And I posted on Facebook. I posted my original FOIA request, and then they responded to it just before this came out, and I was like, I was unprepared for, there's no way. I'm like, you guys got to give me more notice than this. So I just put my FOIA request up and it says here's where it's coming and here's where it is. Part one. It's weird because part one came out and then it was pulled back. Then part two came out and stayed for a little bit. And then both went down and then both came back. So somebody screwed up on a redaction, I guess, somewhere. And I didn't download it fast enough to figure out which one it was.
Well, the thing is, though, it's one of those, like, had they listened to Eric Paddock?
Yeah. Yep.
Years ago. Like, think of all the, because we're coming up on 7 years. Is it six? 6-year-long investigation, biggest mass shooting in American history that everybody has forgotten about. Crazy money laundering going on, crazy hiding of, not hiding of truth as far as shooters, things like that, but obfuscation of the obvious failures by the sheriff's department to stop it, anything like that. To prevent it from happening when they could have prevented it.
Yep. And they did that during an election year.
Yep.
And they timed it so that information, the body worn camera footage, especially with Cordell Hendrick, and some other, you know, questionable images that came out, that was pushed until after the election. because we wanted, right? Why is there a delay on giving us the body
worn appearance of the security guard that was testifying everywhere?
Right.
Appeared on Ellen.
Exactly. Hector Campos is like nowhere to be found, and then he's found, and next thing you know, we hear he's coming back from Mexico. We hear he's coming back from Mexico, which means no one told us he went to Mexico.
So we just let people involved with intimately involved with investigations just flee the country.
Exactly. And granted, his excuse appears to have been semi-legit. Maybe he went down there to give, some of that $300,000 that he was given, and for the two condos and blah, 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 all this other stuff that he still lives in, I think. So he goes down there and does whatever he does and comes back, his family reunion kind of thing with his dad and whatever. And that's cool, whatever. There's a lot of people need some answers. And you need to be talking to these people very soon. You can let a day go by for people to gather their senses, but you've got to get on these people right away to get this information before it starts getting diluted. People start talking to each other, then their stories start mixing together and all this other stuff.
You start getting false memories. You start getting the meld of somebody else's memory with the shared memory of somebody else whose story they shared with them.
Exactly. And that's a normal human thing.
Absolutely.
That is
no fault of anybody.
Exactly. You can't fault people for doing that, but that you can fault the investigators for allowing certain key people to even interact. And keep in mind, he was put up in the Aria, and his brother-in-law was up there with him. And the little known secret is that we interviewed him, brought him out here to California. I'm in Florida now. But brought him to California, and me and Ramsey, facilitated that got a lot of inside information, and we never put it out there because the guy turned into a whatever you want to call it. And we didn't run with it. It wasn't information necessarily that we felt was detrimental to the case. It was just like he had his personal beef he had to get out there, and that just wasn't going to happen. So back to where we are now. So that information comes out. A ton of it is so redacted that you look at some of these pages and you just wonder, why did they even put this page in? And putting the page in there makes people upset. If the page just says, hi, my name is and then everything after that is redacted, all that does is it puts that person on the spot for someone to contact them now to bug the hell out of them. Okay, which is a problem. Or B, it just creates a problem for anyone reading the thing going, wow, okay, so why would you even put this piece of paper in here? Now you're just making me mad that you're holding back all this information. More conspiracy theories are born and so forth, and there's nothing to stop it. And, there's really not. There needs to be a conspiracy theory consortium of people to say, look, if you're going to put out information, and you put it out this way, you're asking for it. Maybe that's what they meant to do. I don't know. It's the FBI.
Well, and there is that false flag way of putting things out where, yes, you are putting out the truth in such a way that it discredits itself.
Yeah. Yep.
And in an intentional way to discredit the truth. I mean, they've done it for years and years with UFO, UAP witnesses, things like that, to literally normalize the crazy.
Yeah. And it's weird because as I get further and further into all of these, communities that I'm involved in.
Cause hey man, there were even people that called you a damn conspiracy theorist about this thing.
Yeah,
and it's like there's no conspiracy theory there. What he's doing is dispelling conspiracy theories about multiple shooters, the Shah of Iran being involved.
Well, then they said I was working for the CIA, which I've never worked for the CIA.
I haven't seen that badge.
No, I there's other places, but
seen
not
most
there.
Of your badges, but I haven't seen that one.
and you gotta love. That part there amuses me, but when I know the person is serious it starts to alarm me a little bit. It's like, I'm honestly, I basically went broke doing this, all these investigations and stuff, because I was charging nobody anything for any of this stuff.
Yeah.
And going through. So all my own money was on the line. My channel wasn't monetized. If I was doing all these things that people claimed, I should be sitting in a nice, pretty house somewhere with a brand new Corvette sitting in the driveway, but I'm not.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, let that be a lesson for somebody, I guess. Don't do what I do. But the thing is that when you try to piece together the information, that I did and some others did, and we were able to get closer to the truth than the FBI. The FBI could not get the motive. We had it right away. And so, you know, and then once I started talking with Eric Paddock, and then Eric said, you know what? You're my kind of scum. I like you. I don't want to deal with a review journal or anyone else. I'm only going to work with you. And I'm like, okay, I didn't ask for that, but that'll work.
Yeah.
Somebody's trying to beep in there. I thought I turned on my do not disturb.
And to see the fact of, because the other thing that they never really truly went into were explored was the loss of Stephen's pilot's license. His private pilot's license, and what that personally did to him to not be able to fly anymore. Like most people I know who fly, like it's like me with my telescope or my music and electronics. Like it is my passion. It's what drives me. It's exactly. It's a means by which I define myself. Like, you know, I don't know a pilot that's not a sense of identity for them, private or commercial. Right. You know,
and it became a cascade event.
Yeah,
he basically what happened.
It was definitely the straw, you know.
Where it started was his heart medication. His heart medication made him sick, and so he stopped taking the blood pressure heart medication. And since he did that, then that meant he was not going to pass an FAA.
Yeah.
Flight physicals for flight, which means he wasn't going to have his pilot's license anymore. So when that went away, that problem is enough for some people to be pissed off. Then you combine that with the side effects that are known to happen with people with heart conditions. And so for the lack of a better term, the performance level may have been a factor for him. And it changed his relationship with Mary Lou Danley, and that became a whole nother possible issue. And I won't get into that. That to me, even though he's gone, it's more of a personal thing, even though I know what it is. I just feel like that's mine and Eric's situation there to talk about. So that scenario. And then you combine that with the casinos. Who he would go in, and the problem was he got really good at playing video poker. He knew which machines to play, which machines paid out, you know, the highest amount. And that's what he did. And even if he broke even, but still got to live the lifestyle that he became accustomed to by going to these places, then that was for him. So he did it in Reno.
Yeah. Getting your comp suites, getting your dinner cards, you know,
exactly.
Getting your coupons for shopping, all that stuff.
Right. And so Reno was closer to him. And so he would go there, and then he was a bigger fish in a smaller pond, is how Eric likes to say it. And by doing so in Reno, he felt like king of the world, you know, blah, blah, blah. But then they started taking the comps away from him because they weren't making any money. And if you're not making money on someone, they don't want anything to do with you. Taking some more words from Eric. So you pass that along, and then you move forward, and then now he's going to go to Vegas, which Vegas, they'll notice me, and I can get, you know, the similar comps like I was getting in Reno style wise, but I, you know, he's not going to be like a Hugh Hefner or.
Yeah, he's not going to be a standout high roller. How you doing today, Mr. Paddock?
Right. Right. And he'll be a part of whatever, you know, whatever high dollar club it is, whatever. So he feels, you know, special and blah, blah, blah. And that's what he needed. And a lot of people need that. I like it, but I don't need it, but I like it. Yeah. You know, and you could probably get addicted to it once you become accustomed to being treated that way.
Oh, and there's absolutely, you can get addicted to that.
Hell yeah. And when people start taking that away from you, and especially when they do it through methods that are, you know, it's Vegas. I mean, they just like, oh, sorry, Mr. Paddock. Everyone else is going to get all of their comps and their 3x points on the slot machines tonight, plus the whatever, blah, 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 yeah, and the video poker, but not you, because you are, you know what machines to play.
So yeah, you're, yeah, because you've got a system.
Yeah. Yeah, and they call those people advantage players.
Yeah.
And so he became what amounted to an advanced player to a degree, and some people would argue that, because normally you could only do that with table games. But anyway, so that was his issue. So if you look at the totality of what was taken away from him, now on the realistic human side, it's not enough to do what he did. There's nothing that could ever justify anything that he did. But for some reason, it clicked in his mind that he was, I guess, over it, done with everything, and he methodically planned this over a long period of time. This wasn't a spur of the moment, week long thing or month long thing, even really a year long thing. This plan apparently was done over a long period of time.
Well, I just mm-hmm. highlighted a part in a Newsweek article that I'd never seen before. Number one, Las Vegas shooter Stephen Paddock was fascinated by Oklahoma City bombing. But also, he had been threatening violent actions for about a month before the shooting happened. And, you know, I mean, yeah. I even threw out I remember my hat in the ring for the conspiracy theory of, yeah, he used to do accounting for Lockheed Martin. You know, maybe he was just done with hiding things for Skunk Works, because sure was interesting how that first shot rang off at the fuel tanks over near Janet Airlines. You know, and I think that was much more inspired by his love of the Oklahoma City bombing. And How could I make a mass event as easy as possible? And yeah, taking out a fuel tank at an airport would be an easy way to do that. And when that didn't work, well, I'm already here with all the guns. There's a crowd.
And if you know, I don't know if you remember this or not, but in the very beginning, someone from a certain organization contacted me because I said something, and I actually had to take the video down. As the video I made where I was explaining why he was shooting at the tanks. And at the time, they acknowledged that my theory was correct and that they would appreciate it if I would remove that, because they haven't gone through the process of making the necessary changes across the board where these tanks are set up in that same manner. So there was I still feel weird talking about it. I can say it now, but I'm not going to be as specific, but he was not aiming at the tank. I mean, people are saying, how could you shoot at the tank 8 times and miss it 6 times? It's because he was not shooting at the tank. There was
probably shooting at the regulator valve.
Basically something similar or along those lines he was shooting at, because he knew that you had to atomize the
exactly.
He was a pilot.
Yeah. Fuel in and of itself, the liquid inside the pressurized tank is not what's flammable. What's flammable is the aerosolized fume. So
not even that. Exactly. The aerosolized fume after it's aerosolized.
Yeah.
Meaning that it's
gotta be pumped into the air.
Yeah, gasoline has put off fumes, and those fumes explode regardless. It doesn't make any difference.
Yeah.
You can take a match and throw it into diesel or kerosene, and it will not ignite.
Exactly. It has to have a medium to burn through.
Right. And so what happens is, just like you have a vape pen or a vape, when, or a humidifier for that matter, is the actual molecules have to be atomized, which is a weird word because it sounds like it's on a molecular, you know, quantum level.
No, I mean, and, think about it this way, folks. What your grandma used to spray her perfume on, it's called an atomizer. So, yeah, all you got to do is aerosolize it, basically. Make it into a mist in the air, and now it's flammable. Because it's the mix of the oxygen and the fuel that becomes flammable. And, of course, jet fuel is part kerosene.
Correct.
So it's not like it's gasoline. It's much more of an oil, petroleum, true petroleum base. So it's under different circumstances. And like you said, yeah, trying to hit that regulator valve that would then, via pressure, spew it out into the air. And then, hey, hit the tank, make a spark, and you're all good.
Right. And so keep in mind, he started shooting into the crowd first. And that's, remember that I originally thought the first five or six shots went to the tank. They did not.
Oh.
They did not go to the tank. The tanks were not shot at until 10:08 and 10:09. And that's when the first shot went to the tank. So I'll call it my theory, but it's based on obviously
a deduction. A
ridiculous amount of research. He was shooting into the crowd to try to get the crowd to go essentially a direction. The direction would be
toward
away.
The tank.
Yeah, away from him, which would put them toward the tank. So naturally, if he didn't shoot at those tanks until 10:08 and 10:09, while the people were heading in general that direction, then it only makes sense that he was trying to get them over there, and then he'd shoot at the tanks, and they would explode, and it would just be a much more horrific,
large mass casualty event.
Exactly. So, and then there's the question of the Tannerite, and that may have been another situation where he was going to utilize the Tannerite against the tanks or what have you. Who knows? Mm. That's pure speculation there. Eric and I have discussed it at length. Neither of us have a clue, but you know, you can start to surmise that at some point in time when they do a movie or whatever on this event, that the thought that he's going through are going to have to be portrayed on screen, and they're going to have to go, well, what thoughts do we go with? And the ones that make sense are him shooting into the crowd, trying to get them to go over towards the tanks, and him trying to get the tanks to ignite. The tanks don't ignite. You can tell he's getting frustrated, and he comes back. So he fires six shots towards the tanks, and doesn't hit anything. And two of the shots make it. So one hits in the midline, one hits towards the top. And then he goes back into room 324 and then starts firing again into the crowd.
Yeah.
Again, trying to get them corralled, whatever direction he was trying to do, back towards the tanks again. And he goes back into room 325. God, I'm my brain fart right now. He goes back in there. So he picks up the L10, goes in there and starts firing again. He fires two more shots, misses those shots. That's it. He's done. 20 seconds later, he goes back in, picks up the air light and shoots himself. And done. And that's the end of the story. But then starts this whole other story that's going to be played out in these pages that the FBI released. Now, I'm going to tell you this.
Well, and a crazed story, man, a crazed story where we start getting into bodies that have been moved before investigators get there, all kinds of stuff. Practices that went into play before, during, and after this.
Here's something that no one knows. When our FOIA request was answered, the FOIA request told us, myself, and I get Michelle will come out in one day's, since I put it out there, that's the other person I was working with on these things. And I don't know if you know or not, but we'll just say Michelle.
Pretty sure I do.
Okay, good. Yeah, you very well might. And so that FOIA request goes in, and then what came back was the response. The response was, it's going to cost $450. Okay, no big deal. That's not a problem. and it's going to be 28 CDs and over 14,000 documents. Well, what we have in the FBI vault is not 14,000 documents. So anyone listening to this, be assured that I'm going to contact the FBI back and say, look, you said that you responded to my FOIA request. You sent me an email saying your FOIA request is being responded to, yeah. And we are putting that into the vault. Okay, great. I go look in the vault, and it's what, 700, whatever, however many pages, is less than 1,000 pages. And it's supposed to be 14,000 that we're responding to, 28 CDs of information. So that's not there. So there's still more to be had. And what that entails, I don't really know. There might be some different answers in there that we need to have, because at some point we need to know more than just what Eric and I have pieced together and what we feel the motive is. And now the rest of the media has caught up, we were talking about this on your show five years ago,
like within 6-7 months of the event.
You would think that, okay, if you guys are going to come out with a headline that, oh, FBI releases blah, 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 and it appears that the reason, the motive, was because he was pissed off at the casinos. No
FBI
one
FBI releases went, known quantitative.
Yeah, and so no one. Yeah. It's like, oh, my God, you guys, not one of these reporters, not one of these news organizations went and looked and or thought,
yeah.
Didn't we hear this before? Wasn't there some obscure, no name, nobody, little guy, five something other, and some other guy, and blew this and that, and you got Jim Breslow, and you got Chris Jordan, and he's got these guys that we're all talking the same tune now, because we've all basically heard from Eric, I guess through me or whatever, and it's like, hey, here's the reason. If you're going to go find the reason, for the largest mass shooting in U.S. history, and you want to know what the motive is, you would go to the person who knows him the best.
Yeah.
And the person who knew him the best was his brother. And that's exactly what I did.
Yeah.
And absolutely. I spent this whole past weekend with him. So,
And once again, even the fact of, and I lauded you for this privately and even on the show, whenever it came out, the fact of he was talking to nobody but you and Ram.
Yeah.
Because he saw what the media frenzy was. He saw what they were trying to do, that they were doing nothing but trying to feed into the frenzy, that they were doing nothing but trying to obfuscate what was pretty obvious. Mm-hmm. And to turn this horrible moment of suffering for both all of these victims, but also the Paddock family.
Yeah.
Into a media moment to be sold to sponsors.
Yeah.
And
here's one thing we're going to do in the next day or so, or whenever it's convenient for everybody involved, myself, you, and what have you. Mm. Eric and I are going to do a live event, where we discuss everything that's happened since the last time we talked about essentially everything that's happened.
Wow.
From the horse's mouth, so to speak. So we'll know all about the finances, the guns, where are the guns now, what happened with the houses, all this different stuff that people may have questions on. And people will be able to ask their questions. So whatever questions you have, get those together. And I'm putting Chris on the spot right now. If you want, I will broadcast this out in such a way that you can come on board and basically co-host it with me if you want.
Yeah.
And because it's important. I'm not out here to try
No, to absolutely. I would love myself. To simulcast that.
Absolutely. By all means. And we'll try to get to
Because at that point we can only get more questions from my live audience on Facebook and YouTube and that kind of stuff.
Exactly. And then I'll have the YouTube and Twitter thing going. So areas that you are not strong in and I'm stronger in, that will kind of marry that all together, and it'll probably balance out pretty well. So I'll try to monitor all of them, but we're going to have to have, hopefully a more of a centralized input of questions. But however we do that, we'll figure it out and everybody will know in advance. And we'll try to give you advance notice.
I mean, I can put up a submission form or something like that for questions, and even throw out social media wise, like, this is happening. What questions do you have?
Yeah. And this will be the first time that Eric has ever opened himself up in such a way that that people can almost directly talk to him. I'm going to kind of filter some stuff because I don't know what's going to happen. And
that's just it. That's just it. And I mean, even to go to the communities that you and I belong to and proffer that option, I think number one is a great moment of healing for them.
Yeah.
And also a great moment of healing for him, because once again, we have to remember that there are other victims here too, that were not on the end of bullets, you know, and that's the family of Stephen Paddock who themselves have no answers.
Right.
For the loss of their family member and why he did this horrible thing. You know, they have their inklings. And like you said, their inklings and gut feelings go beyond anything that the FBI has said. But oddly enough, they've come right to the same conclusion that the inklings and feelings had from the get-go.
Amazing, isn't it?
Odd that.
Yep. And Eric he fully understands the position that he's in, being the brother of the fear, and he knows everyone has to understand. You know, some people say, "I show him no empathy." Blah blah blah. It's his brother. You have to understand.
He didn't do this.
Yeah, he didn't do it. But at the same time, he does understand that there's that situation out there where people will think, because people have threatened me and said, I lost one of my best friends because he said it's either Eric or me. And you know who it is. I don't know if you remember who it is, but it was, his name started with the letter E as well. Mm-hmm. And basically I was told that if I was a friend of Eric Paddock, and I don't, you know, I didn't ask to be a friend. We just, over time, just in talking to him so much, trying to figure out why this happened, trying to get answers for everybody.
Yeah, that barrier of trust became that.
Yeah, and then I was ostracized from so many different communities because, he's friends with a brother of the shooter. Get him out of here. I'm like, wow, what the hell? I'm trying to answer the very questions that you guys want to know why. I think I might have the answer why, and now apparently NBC has the answer why.
Yeah, everybody has the answer why, which is, the same answer you've been trying to shoot, like not even raise a red flag, like actively shooting flares in the air of, hey, you, look at this.
Amazing.
So, when people ask why I have you on, that's why I have you on, Mike. And that's why I trust your information regarding UFOs, UAPs. Why I trust the deductions that we make together of just the Occam's razor, you know, this is the data that you have been putting out about. Since this event, since it happened,
and there's some things I've already been wrong on.
Oh,
and
sure.
The differences that I see among
you publicly say you were wrong.
I screwed up.
No problem. You've said you're wrong on this show.
Yeah, I have. I have, and to, for me. That's how you grow. That's how you learn.
That's right.
You know, and that's how, like, I guess if you want to consider it, the scientific method works. If you jump on a story and you ride it till the wheels fall off, then you may be riding it alone when the wheels come off. It's just you gotta be careful on these touchy subjects. Keep in mind the subjects that you talk about on your show. You know, you're way more into all of this than I am. And the subject matter and the people that you talk to, everyone is, I mean, we're all real people. Every one of us, we all have experiences and things that happen in our life. And no matter what, you have to take care and compassion for all of that. And you do such an absolutely wonderful job, especially balancing. Cause sometimes I come in on that debunked skeptical end. And then you, then the next day you'll have someone on the opposite end, and being able to balance that is an amazing thing. And the thing is I have to do the same thing because I have to talk to everyone, even if I don't.
That's my job as a proper skeptic. And that's what people, that's what people don't understand about skepticism. I am a believing skeptic all day long because I have had my immense formative experiences that have changed me and polarized me in my life and the way I do things,
right?
And the way I live my life and interact with people. And those are non-quantifiable experiences. I have talked to the people that were in the room when those experiences happened to me, and they did not have them. They did not feel that presence. They were not there.
And the odd thing that I think I finally started to try to draw a picture of it. People place me in a category of like the debunker, the skeptical guy or whatever. But that would work if I was a person who only went by information online and I had like a podcast and I just talked about it.
Hey.
Okay. Well, no, I don't mean... Yeah, that didn't come out right.
Hey.
Okay. Well, okay. Okay. That was very condescending. I apologize for it coming out.
I'm just jacking with you, brother.
but where I'm going with this is that I'm not just that. Yeah. I actually get in. I become part of the story. I go in and investigate these things from the inside, and I'm not investigating them while I'm talking to people. I'm going to these. I went to Skunk Works. I went to area wherever the
you were
things
actively
are.
Diving for the body of Carol Baskin's missing husband. Like
all of these different. Yeah. Yes, exactly. With the alligators.
Yeah, yeah.
No one's ever seen that video with the alligator brushing up against me, scared the living shit out of me.
Holy but yeah, crap. Yeah, that's just it. Like that's the kind of like that's what brought you out to Florida to begin with was following the tales of that story.
Yeah,
you know, and getting in deep with all kinds of stuff with that.
Exactly. And so what happens is I get involved at a level that is odd for me to come back out and if I know something, here's I guess where I was going with that. It's one thing on the skeptical side, the debunker side, the whatever you want to call it side, where I come out and I say, well, I think it may be this, or whatever. Okay. Then, you know, that you take with a grain of salt. Where the passion comes in, and I guess where I got emotionally and like lost it with Lou Elizondo and I know a lot more about Lou than I ever knew before. It feels kind of vindicated when you see over time that I said things in the beginning about Lou that no one would believe. No, you know, no, that's not possible. And then I said, well, you know what? I'm not going to go against the person. I'm just going to go against the work. You know, so that's why I went against the videos. I said, look, I'm just going to look at the videos for what's in the videos. I don't even want to talk about what Kevin Day said, what David Fravor said, what Alex Deakin said, what anyone said. I just want to talk about the actual tangible evidence
in front of you. Because again, I'm the same way. I will believe the experiencer all day long. What I'm looking at is the evidence in front of me. I am not doubting the experience of the experiencer.
Exactly. And I'm in the exact same boat you are. Yeah. I know. I've talked to a lot of people, you know, firsthand, and some people have told me, if you ever say that I talk to you, I will deny it till the end of time because I was such a controversial figure. And so people contact me and said, hey, Mike, I just want to let you know, I won't say what it was, but just say, hey, one of them was very prominent and just said, look, I just want you to know if it ever comes out, you hit the nail on the head, keep going down the course you're going, the answers will come to you in one way or another. I just can't provide that right now because unfortunately I'm in the position that I'm in. And I go, I fully understand, which I didn't understand, but I kind of understand it.
Whenever I literally at breakfast asked Hal Putoff to come on my show, you know, and the reasoning he told me, and I was like, I firmly understand why they read you onto everything, Hal, so that you can't come on to shows like mine. That's why they read you onto everything and put you onto every panel, dude.
Yep.
Is now you can't talk about your work 30 years ago. You still can't.
I just loved it. There were, when he was doing that whatever that that webinar or whatever it is he was doing, on his desktop was my video. And that just made my day. I was like, wow. Well, I didn't even know it. Somebody sent me that screenshot to, hey, look in the bottom right hand side of his screen there and you can see it says Mike Trevor, blah, 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 you know, go fast video. And I'm like, what the hell are
You know, made man. I want to thank you, number one, for the massive compliment. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I strive very hard to be open-minded, be open-hearted, and to never live my life inside of a box in the way that I think. I tried to make that intellectual promise to myself a few decades ago.
And you've done well.
Thank you. I greatly appreciate it. And I always appreciate the time that you give us. It's always a massive amount of time discussing these topics, rabbit holing. And once again, like you said, the idea is, scientific method. People, I mean, aside from the FBI classifying conspiracy theory as a terrorist watchword, aside from that, there's a reason we follow the scientific method and why we say we have a conspiracy hypothesis. Because by scientific method, you are allowed to hypothesize anything. And through experimentation, you will prove or disprove the hypothesis, and then it becomes a theory. And then through further experimentation, it might become a law.
If it's
static enough within the structure of things. But you're allowed to hypothesize anything. And I want to thank you for always coming on the show and banging through hypothesis with this, literally just knocking things around and maybe this, maybe that, because it is through that exploration that we come to these points of conclusion, that we come to banging things around. It really seems like Eric Paddock was really ticked off that his way he lived his life was taken away. And lo and behold, now 5 years later, the FBI has caught up to that. And that's just it. It is the hypothesis that wins the day, and being able to do that with an open mind. So thank you for always taking the time to do that with us here on this show, Mike.
You got it, bud. Anytime. Always there for you.
Before we let you go, let everybody know where they can go to follow your work, where they can go to keep up with you. I would bring your Twitter up, but I'm not signed in on Twitter anywhere, really.
We got to get you up to speed on that.
But, God, man. You and the Twitter, TikTok, I don't know, dude. Like, I got enough things going on. But let everybody know
because,
of course, there is the 5x5 News YouTube. That's where you post all the videos, all kinds of things. But you have other conversations and postings going on other places. So let everybody know where they can go to keep up with that.
Probably the best two places to go for something current and something that's hot, like the hot potato, is you actually get to see the interactions, like me and Travis Taylor, or me and Lou Elizondo, or somebody, whoever it is that we're the current hot potato of the moment, is we actually can engage in Twitter. And in doing so, it actually opens up a lot of windows of opportunity to see into this whole world that we have put before us that we're trying to figure out. All of us are trying to figure it out. It's not just the skeptics or the non-believers or the believers or whatever. It's just, I am a believer, but I'm just a little skeptical. But at the same time, you can actually watch the conversations live on Twitter. If you go to YouTube, you'll get to see some of the work that I've done, some of the things I'm kind of working on. And every now and then I'll pop in something kind of personal in there. You know, it's 5x5 News. So some people look at it and they'll say, looks like it's drawing a little personal account. Well, yeah, I am a human being. And so I'll throw some things in there that kind of show, you know, the human side of the things that I do. So either those two places primary, or just become a friend of mine on Facebook. you know, I'm at that 5,000 cap anyway, but just say, you know, come in here and say, hey, you kind of want to follow me around, and that's fine too. And we're all going to get to the end in time. Let's just have a little fun while we're on our way there.
On the road. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's learn some stuff on the way.
Exactly. It's I was having a conversation with a buddy yesterday, and it's not that I don't think I'm not going to die. It's just, you know, with modern science and everything else, nothing saying I couldn't live to 200-300.
I'm just going to put my consciousness.
Little Talladega Nights there for you. But Mike, once again, thanks so much, bud. I always love our conversations. Hold the line while we close things out real quick. While you are online following all the amazing work of Mike Turber over at 5x5 News, of course, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. That is the website. That's where you can find all the episodes. That's where you can follow us on the social media platforms. That's where you can stop by. Give us your own experience. If you are an experiencer and you'd like to share your experience here on the show, give us a call. 512-298-3913. You can leave us a voicemail that we will use here on the show. If you'd like it to be anonymized, let us know. We'll change your voice, all that kind of stuff. But we will bring your experience, whether you're a targeted individual, whether you've been abducted by aliens, whether you're a whistleblower, we will bring your information to our experts and get you more information, get you maybe some answers on what is going on with you. Thank you so much, as always, folks, for tuning in. Thank you for always being there and being part of the open-hearted, open-minded conversation. Until next time, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other, and remember, stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault on our website, CuriousRealm.com. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast services, as well as YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV through the APR TV app, available on all app markets. Curious Realm is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great content or to become a sponsor of Curious Realm or other podcasts, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.